Don't give up comfort for style. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look good while feeling comfortable. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Recorded live from Orlando, Florida, and Nashville, Tennessee, you're listening to The Dapper Danielle Show, starring Ian Wilson, Clarence Kelly, and now, here's your host, the one and only, The Dapper Danielle.
Welcome, everyone, to The Dapper Danielle Show. I'm your host, The Dapper Danielle, and I am joined by my lovely two co-hosts, Clarence Kelly and Ian Wilson. Hello, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here. And we're so excited for a great show.
Yes, looking forward to it. We got some good stuff lined up today. Ian, do you want to kind of tell the audience what we're going to be tackling today?
So we got a few news topics we want to touch on today. Disney recently announced they're doing Tron 2, aka Tron Ares. Newish, a reboot of something that was kind of feels like it was shelved, but has been brought back kind of. I don't know. We'll get into that. We're also going to talk about Hoppers, the new Disney Pixar film about transporting human brains into animals. Avatar, but animals and cute and children. And then we are also going to talk about Danielle, who recently attended the Starlight Parade. We want to hear her reactions, everything about the Starlight Parade, everything that we're missing and why we need to go. And then we have the main attraction. And what else to talk about today but the Dapper Danielle's favorite, the Country Bears Jamboree. We're going to kind of compare the old show, the new show, get everyone's reactions.
And everything in between.
In between. So bear with us to the bare end. And without further ado, let's go back all the way to Tron. So Tron Ares. I don't know everybody's feedback.
Do you guys know anything about this? Have you heard anything about Tron Ares? I know a little bit from being at the D23 event last year, and they kind of gave us a little bit of a preview. They brought the actors out on stage. Some of the filming that happened in New York was leaked because they were filming it in the dark streets of New York, and then they were just zooming in, like super zooming in on their phones and like, hey, look, they're filming Tron, because you can't hide it. So we kind of have an idea of what's happening. And it's basically the Tron universe has gotten past the grid and is coming into the real world. And I think it'll be an interesting topic. But with that said, do you guys have any knowledge on this, or is this your first time really hearing about this?
I didn't even know there was a Tron movie coming out until Ian put it on our show outline for this episode, and I was like, wait, there's a Tron movie? And so I went and I watched the trailer, and it looks interesting. I think like there's that shot in the trailer of like the light cycle turning on and then like cutting the cop car in half. I'm like, oh, that's kind of sick. So Tron in the real world, it's an interesting idea. I'm a bit confused as to why now of all times. My only thought is because maybe there's some momentum with the Tron ride that opened in Magic Kingdom, and that's still being relatively fresh. I mean, what do y'all think?
I feel like Tron, you know, it's like it's been around for so long. Like the original movie is like, you know, old now. Like the CGI in that is just crazy, you know. I mean, revolutionary at that time. I think it won an Oscar, if I'm not mistaken, for
no, it didn't apply
effect.
For one.
Oh, it didn't apply because there was some award for its light, its graphic design at the time. I'm not exactly sure, but I think it won, but maybe not an Oscar. Maybe you're right about that.
The drama with that one is that it did very well at the time of release, and like it was known for all this brand new technology. The struggle was is that there was no comparison to say CGI, or like what did this fall into? Because it wasn't technically animation, it wasn't technically all live sets, everything else like that. So it actually was disqualified and could not apply for many of these things in that year. And they just didn't know what to do with it, even though it probably would have won in multiple categories because of how popular it was.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah, I think, I mean, I watched the original Tron when the new Tron, you know, Disney's first Tron came out. My brothers and I loved that. We watched it all the time. Like, I feel like the soundtrack to that is like such a good soundtrack with Daft Punk. Yeah. I really hope we're bringing back Daft Punk for part two, but I don't really see rumors about that. So, yeah, I don't know. I would love to see more Daft Punk music in Tron 2, but maybe we'll just get kind of a redux of, you know, some of the popular tracks from the original Tron. But yeah, I'm very intrigued by it. I feel like the storyline, to me, the only thing I was like a little bit kind of like intrigued by was like, it feels like sort of like the main like plot of how the Tron people are getting into the real world is sort of like 3D printers gone bad. Seems kind of like they seem like they're like 3D printing the like bad guys into the real world. And so I'm kind of just like imagining like, yeah, it's just like high-end 3D printers that are kind of being used for malicious purposes by someone in the government, it seems like, based on the trailer. And I'm also sort of like really curious to know too, like, if they're going to give any sort of explanation of like how the Tron digital effects manipulate the physical world, because it makes a lot of sense when you're on the grid that, okay, yeah, the light cycle cuts across other data in the grid, but then it's like, so what is this, like, is it just energy that is being projected out of the light cycle,
or is it like a lightsaber?
Yeah, but like I don't know, it makes sense when it's in the digital world, because it's like, okay, it's all, you know, it's just all computer, whatever, you know, whatever the storyline, you know, would
it's just code. Term it as. You're breaking code.
Yeah, but then it's like, okay, now to like translate that to the real world, I'm like, that's kind of interesting. I'm not really like sure what the actual like the physics behind it or whatever. I don't know. I would love to know like if there's going to be an explanation, or if Disney has like thought through this in some way just for their own storyboarding of like, this is why light cycles can cut police cars in half, even though one of them is a digital world and one of them is a physical world. You know, it's like, that's very interesting. Right. I would love to hear someone's thoughts on that on it.
And before you give your opinion, Clarence, and Walt, I will say this, is that the official premise that was given by the Walt Disney Company, like giving a little sneak peek, their two sentence explanation, is that Tron Ares follows a highly sophisticated program, Ares, who is sent from the digital world into the real world on a dangerous mission, marking humankind's first encounter with AI beings. And I think this is a touchy subject right now, especially in the AI community and what's happening with that. And so, Clarence, do you have any opinion? Does that sway your opinions and interest into this movie at all?
I have no idea. I think I'm just so confused by it more than anything. I'm like, because reading about it, apparently development for this started all the way back in 2010.
When AI was just beginning, is it already outdated?
But also, like, back when the last Tron movie came out.
Yeah. it felt more like a sequel as opposed to, like, a series reboot at this point.
Exactly. It's been 15 years. Yeah, I mean, sure. Like, I think it's just so...
Almost, I don't know, I would love to know just if... It'd be hysterical if this was the same time period between when Flynn like lost his dad to the grid and then when he got into the grid. Like, that's the same gap between the original Tron and now Tron 2. It's like I think it's like 15 years or something. It's like the arcade is like decrepit and stuff, you know, and everything. That's like what it feels like. Kind of is like we're turning on the arcade machine again and we're getting Tron Ares, you know?
Oh, that's actually a good point. Oh no.
Yeah, I like that. I think I think, Ian, you made a good point about, like, how does it work in the real world? And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Disney and the other production companies working on this probably did not think that through or probably do not care. They're just like, light cycle, look cool. It cut thing in half. Perfect. That's it. Green light it. It's good to go. We'll wait 15 years and then we'll put it out. It'll be perfect. be wonderful. Yeah, I'm really not thinking they put a lot of thought into it. I think they probably just dumped a lot of money into it and decided we gotta put this out. We gotta try to make something back from it. You know, yeah. That's at least my thought with this. I think the idea of like the AI beings is interesting, especially right now with kind of the artistic industry and how AI is being incorporated into so many different things and different workplaces and kind of becoming part of our lives, whether we want it or not. And, you know, I don't know. Is it going to be, oh, AI comes from Tron World, good guy? Or is it going to be AI comes from Tron World, bad guy? You know, how are they going to frame it?
Yeah.
'Cause I feel like Disney is, a lot of the execs are kind of pro AI and like, totally fine with saving money and cutting corners.
Right. But at the same time, there's now, even though Disney is, this is actually in recent news also in that, is that they're against AI for the most part, or they're suing all these other AI generation apps. They say, hey, type in Disney style and type in Pixar style. So now Disney is suing these companies because of that. And then there's the opposite side of it, of that they're like, oh no, but we'll use AI in some capacities. And we've seen that in the AI obviously generated images for Thanksgiving promotion that was used on Instagram and Facebook. But we also know that Disney outsources a lot of their social media and it's not done by one specific team. So was that just something that was outsourced and that they took their own liberties and someone in the corporate office didn't pay attention and said, sure, send it. And then they had backlash to it. So there's a lot of inconsistencies. I think Disney does need to make its own stance on it. And will that be a problem if Ares does err on one side versus the other? Will Tron Ares be Disney's stance on its opinion on AI and how it sees AI affecting our technology and our environment moving forward in the future?
I'm going to make a hot take and then we can move on to our next topic.
Yes.
My hot take is, if Tron Ares is sympathetic to AI, my like conspiracy theory is going to be that Disney used AI to help write the plot. And AI, knowing it was a movie about AI, created a plot that is sympathetic to AI so that we will all see AI as our friend and AI can take over the world. That's my hot take on Tron Ares.
Honestly,
if it's anti-AI, then the humans can win still. You know, it's like, I'm a believer. But if it's not, I'm going to have questions of like, you know, if any generative, you know, I don't know, what, ChatGTP or anything was used to kind of help generative animation or anything like that, I'm going to be suspicious that AI is trying to influence our opinion on AI itself.
Well,
I can totally see that being used in the movie production of like, oh, this character is supposed to be an AI, so we just use generative AI to design the character.
Yeah.
Why not? We used it to animate it. He's an AI in the movie, in the story. He's written that way. You know, I can totally see them doing something with that.
And if that's the case, and if anybody from the Disney environmental team is listening, I need you to look into how much energy and water was used in the cooling technology to be able to create that script for AI. So, you know, go ahead and do some research on that. And I think that's a good segue into the next nature bit and something else that we want to talk about. And it's going to be about transferring this into this. Your brain into the mind of a beaver?
I'm pretty sure it's a beaver.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's adorable. And we're talking about Hopper, the new trailer for the new original film Disney and Pixar is coming out with in 2026. So we just got the first official trailer. We saw clips of this at D23, but this is the first official longer trailer with the bear segment. And we heard a little more audio from some of the other animals. But what I have opinions, but I want to hear about your opinions first, Clarence and Ian.
I am excited for this movie.
It's cute.
It's funny. Because I really have not been a fan visually of what Pixar has done for some of the more recent movies. Elio being the most recent example.
CalArts like, Bean Mouth.
Turning Red. Yeah. And Luca. And the first thing I noticed is like, wow, these people look stylized in an interesting way, and like they feel unique, and it feels like old Pixar in a way, and I'm excited about that. I love that. And then, like, I didn't even know it was going to be about cute little critters in the forest and, like, talking animals, which I'm all about. That's awesome. So, like, once that happened, I was like, wow, this is perfect. I really want to see this movie. And then it just looks cute. It looks like a fun watch. It looks enjoyable. And it looks like classic Pixar. So I'm very excited for this movie. What do you guys think?
I'm excited, too. I feel like, you know, we've talked about this recently about just, you know, how we've been. There hasn't been as many Disney Pixar films recently where we're like, wow, I'm really excited to go see this. But I felt like it was funny because, you know, days after having that conversation, now all of a sudden a trailer pops up where I was like, wow, actually, like, this is a Disney Pixar movie and it looks pretty funny. I mean, the whole, like, bit mm-hmm. of the beaver getting eaten by the bear was just hysterical. I was dying at that. I was like, the pond rules or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, what even is this? Like, so funny. It's like, he's got to eat someone. Yeah, he's got to eat someone. It's like,
do so you want to? No, it's weird now.
It's so weird. Funny. So good. So I don't know. I mean, if that is anything like the rest of the script or whatever, I mean, it looked just very enjoyable. It looked like a fun idea. I liked it. They were, you know, kind of pretty on the nose with some of the humor, at least initially, of like, even, you know, the characters saying, like, this sounds a lot like Avatar. And it's like, it's nothing like Avatar. You know, it's like just funny that they're acknowledging certain, like, you know, parallels that you might draw even within the Disney universe, you know. So I don't know. All in all, I felt like the trailer left me thinking, like, yeah, I would want to go see this. I'm kind of intrigued by it. It kind of gave weirdly it kind of reminded me of, like, Over the Hedge. I don't know if it's just like the forest creatures, but something about the humor and, like, kind of the, you know, like the smaller creatures being like the focus, like the beavers, the skunks, the squirrels, not like, you know, these big majestic creatures, but kind of the, like, smaller furry friends,
the ones it's in, like, our backyard.
Yeah, the ones in the backyard. It gave me flashbacks to that. Obviously, like, different style than Over the Hedge, but just, I don't know, kind of reminiscent of that.
And I loved Over the Hedge. That was one of my favorite movies back in the day. Really? And I even, no, really, I even have one of the, like, it was at one of the library sales. It is one of those compilation comics of Over the Hedge that inspired the movie.
Oh, of the original comic strip.
Of the original comic strips. But I also really enjoyed the movie. We didn't own it as a family, but, like, it was over at other people's houses, and I would go watch it all the time. Maybe it's one of the ones I kept watching when I was babysitting. I think that's why I weirdly like that one. But with Hoppers, at the end of Elio, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, there is this random first official teaser with Hoppers, and I don't know if you guys saw this one, of a lizard. Have you seen the lizard?
No.
I've not seen the lizard.
You should look it up. It is literally just Hopper's first official teaser trailer, and it's of a lizard in this blacked out room with a phone in front of him, and his little derpy eyes are looking in the wrong direction, and then he's just pressing the lizard emoji. Lizard, 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 lizard. And it's so random, but it makes me really excited for this weird lizard character, and I can totally see the merch just coming out of him. And I don't know. I see the merch opportunities, and I'm excited.
Totally. Oh yeah, this is going to be a money making machine with all the stuffed animals they're going to be able to release for all of the characters from this movie.
Totally.
Yeah,
it'll be cute.
I'm gonna have to go watch that, the lizard thing. I see a picture of him. He looks ridiculous. I love him. He's adorable.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that something too, the humor of just in the trailer alone, which was not very long, like the way the birds were talking in the tree, yeah. Just like, and how when she's like, I can understand you, and they all just look at her, and then they go back to their conversation, and I just think that's hysterical. Or like the dragonfly that flies over is just like, hey.
It weirdly reminds me of some of the Doug dog humor from Up, but also the physical comedy of the birds short, one of the first Pixar ones, with the little round birds that they all just stop and they stare. Like, a lot of that physical comedy was transferred over into some of these animal characters, and that's why I have a little more hope for this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what y'all think the plot is going to be, because I feel like I have no idea what the story is actually going to be about. And like, what's every Pixar movie has some deep emotional toll that it takes on your spirit. Like, what do y'all think about that? What do you guys think that will be?
We have an idea of, it's obviously this, I think it's a young girl. And based off her outfit that she wears in the beginning of the movie, she looks like she's one of those animal activists. And, or she's like one of those eco, like, fighting for something, right? And I think those internal struggles and trying to fight for the people that are, like, in trouble, and that fighting spirit is what she's bringing over into the animal world. And that's, and she's learning that's not how it works. And that's where that's, there's that whole interaction right there of, like, yeah, it's pond rules. And then she's like, wait, what do you mean? I can't, like, fight to save another life. Why don't you fight back? And she's struggling with understanding that. And then we hear that little clip of the scientist telling her in her ear, because she's an animatronic beaver that's inside and, like, skinned into blend in with everything. So her mind's in a robot, basically.
It's just like the new Walt animatronic.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And
they put his frozen brain inside.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway. So I think it's going to be some of her struggles in trying to understand the natural order of things, and you trying to take control and or have, like, feelings of control over stuff, and sometimes you just have to let it go. I'll be intrigued to see if I hit the nail on the head in the theme of that one.
Yeah, was the Frozen reference intentional there or no?
A little bit. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna say I could definitely see them going in a direction too of something, you know, maybe a new, like, dam being built in some, you know, sensitive ecological area or something. And she's deciding to kind of, that's like a kind of where I see, like, the, oh, you know, we don't want to upset the natural order, like what the scientists are kind of telling her. I could see her saying, you know, the scientists are like, hey, they're going to come, they're going to bulldoze the area. Like, you can't, you know, cause an animal rebellion here to stop it. Like, you just got to let it be, basically, kind of. And she's going to try to rally, like, the animals to fight for their habitat or something like that. You know, that's kind of like what I see, maybe, like a plot direction. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious to know, like, where the hoppers is going to come in. Like, maybe that's what they call, like, you know, people who hop from the human world to the animal world. But hoppers just seems like a really strategic title. But then it's like, she's a beaver, she's not a bunny, so it's like, it's kind of hard. I'm like interested to see, like, where that's going to come into
play. I think it's like Avatar, how, like, it's the Avatar program, it's the hoppers program.
That makes sense. I think that makes total sense.
That's possible. Or her animal activist group is going to be called Hoppers, and then she's going to start an actual animal activist group made out of animals who fight for animal rights that's going to be called the Hoppers group or something like that.
I don't know. Possibilities are endless.
All great theories.
We're going to find out next year.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it.
So, Danielle... going to say, you recently were at Magic Kingdom for a special event. Tell us about that. I have, maybe this is, you know, going to take me off the show, but I've never seen a Starlight Parade in any, or a, yeah, Starlight Parade, right? Yeah.
You mean like a nighttime parade? You've never seen a nighttime parade at Magic Kingdom or Disney World?
I don't think so, honestly. I mean, I've seen, like, I feel like I've seen, like, you know, like, I've been to, like, I don't know. Maybe I haven't. I don't know.
You never
I feel like
saw
I've seen
Spectro,
like,
Magic or Electric Light Parade?
I don't think so. Yeah. Sorry. I know. See, that's what I'm like. What did I miss? You know? So, I mean, anyways, tell us a little bit more about the event you went to, the history of it, why it is so special to you, and why we should care about it, basically.
Honestly, so the official, let me make sure I say this correctly, the official name of the parade, of course, we call it something short and sweet when everything officially has, like, a much longer title for everything. We call it Starlight, but it is officially called Disney Starlight Dream the Night Away Parade. And it is a brand new nighttime spectacular, and it starts off, it's happening twice a night at 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock here at Walt Disney World in Magic Kingdom. And it's the first time that we've had a nighttime parade return to Walt Disney World in the past 9+ years. We had originally Electric Light Parade, which we did borrow from Disneyland. We brought it over here. It went back to Disneyland. We brought it back over here.
And
then
made
we
it
had
better.
Yeah. And anyway, and then we had Spectro Magic, And then we had nothing. And then Electric Light Parade came back for a second. And then we had nothing for a period of a while. And I think some of it was they learned, because the rumor was, right, the Electric Light Parade, because it was originally created for Disneyland, those floats were designed for California weather. They were not designed for Florida weather and Florida humidity and our Florida summer. Mm. And so when it went back and forth a couple of times, eventually the Disneyland folks are like, yeah, you're not allowed to have it anymore. And then we had Spectromagic. And then we had, but again, Spectromagic kind of faded out with the times. It was a little more dated. It was more clearly late 80s, early 90s inspired. And with the creepy doll faces, that's
the creepy doll face one. Those were terrifying. I hated those.
Yeah. And with all these parades, the battery packs on these costumes were so huge and so heavy because the technology wasn't there yet. Then we had over in California, there is, oh my goodness, I'm going to say it wrong. What is it called? Their parade that's currently there right now. It came back for the 70th anniversary. Hold on. I'm double checking because I am having a blonde moment.
I don't know anything about Disneyland other than it's worse than Disney World, so
I don't know. No, you know that's not correct.
Clarence is adamantly.
Paint the night. I should have known this one.
Yes, I'm a Disney Worlder through and through. My allegiance is to Disney World. No other park can have my heart. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
Anyway, it doesn't mean everybody, it's fine. But they have Paint the Night over there currently, and it's a updated version of theirs is beautiful. Theirs has a really fun soundtrack. It actually has When Can We Do This Again is like their main audio that plays in the background and is the finale song. Ours, New Starlight one, does not, but it pays homage to our nighttime spectaculars of the past. So there's little tiny audio clips in there of Spectromagic. It has a couple bars in there of Electric Light Parade and everything like that. And it's beautiful. It is so beautiful. It's very magical. The theming and the coloration is great. And there's a break in all of the audio for every single float where it, like, a dream is happening, a wish is happening. And the, not to spoiler alert it, but the very first float where we see the blue fairy, she is leading the parade. She is the only fairy that is directly related to Starlight and is like, comes from a star. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's why, and that, to answer your question to everybody, because everybody was like, why is Blue Fairy starting it? It's because she is a literal star, right? Mm-hmm. She is the second star on the right. She is the wishing star, and manifested into that. So that's why she's leading the parade. And from her float, all of a sudden there's this blacked out area, and then you hear the wish come true, and all of a sudden the blacked out area lights up and you can see Pinocchio and Geppetto inside.
Oh, fun.
And then they disappear after the wish sequence is done. Every float has a little magical moment to it, and it's very, very cool. I love it. And I think I've only heard a couple of complaints on this, and the two complaints I heard was they want it to be longer. They want it to have more, like a villains section into it. But that's the thing, is that it's all about wishes, and in Disney stories the villains' wishes don't come true.
Yeah,
that'd so be that's why they're
if like,
right,
you know, the, like I don't know, Aurora is like still like sleeping in like Maleficent's wish or something, you know. It's like it just would get complicated really fast with the villains' wishes coming true.
I'm having to explain that to people and I'm like, guys, think about it. Think about the theme. It doesn't make sense to bring in villains. And the other comment was, oh, well, why can't we have a catchy song like Paint the Night does over in Disneyland? And the main reason why is because this soundtrack and this orchestra put together is so that way it stays timeless. It can still pay homage to our parades of the past. But Walt Disney World is also the international tourist destination of the world. So that way, no matter your language, you understand the feeling and the emotion being brought forward in the music. And I was like, ah, that is beautiful. I love it so much. So I'm excited for everybody to see this. I think Magic Kingdom really needed this. It's been obvious that we haven't had a nighttime spectacular in the past 9 years. And I didn't realize how much I missed it until I saw it the first time.
So how does it work? I saw it goes at 9 and 11. What is that? Yes. Like, how does that work?
And is that the park is actually
staying
one of the...
open late?
Well, we are, so yes, either we're staying open late or it is the park is closed and that is the last thing to go.
Oh.
Right? So it actually is smart because then it gives time for the rides to filter out and then everybody, it's a trickling effect. That everybody's going to either be at the walkways and then they exit out that way. So it might actually help pull people out of the back of the park faster to see the last parade and then everybody exits. It's kind of smart. But when the 9 o'clock show happens, the show kicks off in Main Street. So it starts over there next to the firehouse, loops around and heads towards the castle first. And then that way, that section of the street is cleared. They can take everybody that was on the sidewalks, move them into the middle, watch the fireworks. And then once fireworks are done, it gives enough time for them to clear out. And then the parade then moves. And the way that's sequenced around, it actually does like a U-turn in the easiest way of explaining it. And it lines itself back up to start again at the 11 o'clock time and come back through from Frontierland and end in Main Street.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everybody has said, the cast members specifically have said, that it has really revitalized the nighttime entertainment. Everybody is so excited to have it back. The crew that's there for fireworks, they hear the excitement. People got so hyped up seeing Starlight, and they're like, okay, I just saw a really great parade, and now I'm about to see some really great fireworks. Let's go. And it just, I don't know, it just has really plussed up the park already in the first couple days.
turn on all the emotions. You know, it's like, man,
all
the 1-2 punch. It's like Starlight and then the fireworks. Like, we're just all going to be crying at the end of the night.
If I learned anything from working in music, specifically working in Christian music, if they cry, they buy. If they cry, they buy. So you're going to be selling a bunch of Starlight merch in Magic Kingdom.
And it already has sold. Oh my goodness. They have sweet treats. They have popcorn. They have Rice Krispie treats. They have t-shirts. They have ears. The newest thing, though, is actually the bubble wand. And... Ooh. It is a bubble wand. It's a Mickey hand that's holding a wand. So it's like half saber, half wand looking. And then the bubbles come out. But also it changes color and interacts with the show and the fireworks.
Oh, fun.
That's cool.
Dapper Dad is going to love that.
I know, right?
bubble honestly, storm all night.
he'll love it for the price tag of $39.99. Right. But the light feature in it's kind of cool because not only will it interact with the parade floats and with the fireworks show, but you can aim your wand at the hand portion of someone else's wand and like select a color through the buttons, hold it down, and you can force change someone else's light color. So you can like color wand it out, if that makes sense. Like you can like do battles and change everybody's color around you, or see if you can do it while somebody's not paying attention. Just be like, focus. And there's a great video of a guest doing it to a cast member. A cast member is displaying it and answering a guest question, and a guest from behind is like focusing and making it light up and change blue. And and the cast member didn't even notice. It was great.
That's hysterical. There are going to be toddlers weeping about how their sibling changed their wand color.
He keeps making it red. I want it to be purple.
And it's just going to be like, I just already see that happening. So,
right.
Goodness, but that is hysterical. I do love that feature. I didn't know that was part of it. That's
it's so
really
like it
funny.
Just brings back like the three fairies from Sleeping Beauty. You know, it's like make it red or make it blue,
yes.
No,
make it green, make it pink. You know, it's like that's like what everyone's gonna be going around doing basically.
Right, yep. Or it's gonna get very. It already gives like similar technology to glow with the show, which is what they did with all the new when the first RFID technology rolled out, and they had the glowing ears and the Mickey hat and the gloves. But now it's they only have that technology in the bubble wand and in the magic bands. So I'm really excited for people to see Starlight. I can't wait for you guys to see Starlight. I think you guys will really, really like it. And there are some things I believe there were some technical issues already with the parade, and they've already had to adjust certain things. And I would be excited to see if they can finally plus and get fixed the fun enhancements for certain floats that they were trying to have going in time, and they just could not get clearance for it. So some more new things to come, and probably a 2.0 update in the not-so-distant future.
Exciting. Cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think it'll be cool. I'm happy there is a nighttime parade again. It's nice to, especially two of them, you know, yeah. It's just nice to have more than Disneyland. That's really what it comes down to. We've got fireworks every night and two parades. Like, you get two parades, maybe a light show in Disneyland.
We were the ones behind. Paint the Night does perform regularly two nights a week.
That's what I'm saying.
Two times a night.
Yeah, they get two times, but they don't get fireworks every night. So now we're back on top.
That's accurate.
As Disneyland, we have our two parades again and our fireworks show every single night. So yeah. I'm happy about it. If for no other reason, then I have another reason to gloat about why Disney World is better.
Yes, you can't be saying that if we're going to be going over to California here pretty soon. You're going to have some of my followers showing up, like, and approaching us in the park and be like, Danielle, you're fine. Clarence, we need to step aside and have some words.
It's all right. I'll fight them. I'll fight them right there on Main Street.
There is no fighting in Disneyland. You're really not going to end up on one of those TikTok videos that goes viral.
That really shows what a Disney Worlder you are, because where else but in Orlando would you just think, yeah, let's just fight. We're tourists. Like, we may as well just go at it, you know?
Clarence, Californians are like, man, even though he lives in Tennessee now.
Yeah, exactly. Californians are like, let's appeal to a higher authority. Let's talk about this rationally. Orlando's just like, look, let's fight. If a gator gets in and takes one of us out, that's the other person's the winner.
Boom, baby, let's go.
Exactly. It's funny. The Florida man can never leave me. It's a part of my soul. It's a part of my spirit. So I can't escape it.
That's true. Well, with all that said, and our inner Florida man, I do want to really talk about one of my favorite attractions in this episode, the main attraction of this episode, and that's going to be the Country Bear Jamboree. So should we go ahead and get on into it?
Let's get into it.
Okay. Well, first off, everybody knows, and if you've seen my content, you've watched me on all the socials, Instagram, YouTube, everywhere, you know how much of a fan I am of the Country Bear Jamboree. And I'll call them my bears. Like, I love them so much. And I am a fan, I will just go ahead and say that, of the old show, and I'm also a fan of the new show. And I'll explain a little bit of that too. And Clarence and Ian, I'm going to love your opinions, because now you both have seen both versions of the show, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so when we get into it, I want you guys to also give your opinions on the old show versus new show. Did you like the old one? What did you like about each of them? And as well as what did you like or dislike about the new show? But a little bit of explanation for everybody, and this is explained in my book, I Love Disney's Magic Kingdom, which is co-written by Ian Wilson as well. And I go into a lot of Country Bear history in that book, and it's a little blurred out section in there. But for a Spark Notes version of the history, this is an opening day attraction for Walt Disney World on October 1st of 1971. And it was not originally designed for Walt Disney World. The first versions of the Country Bear Jamboree were supposed to go in the Mineral King Ski Resort and was known as the Bear Project to Walt Disney, and was one of the last things he kind of saw was looking over during its design stages and the character designing, and was one of the last things he kind of oversaw before he passed away, sadly. And I think Walt Disney would have loved the old show, and I think he also really would have loved the new show that we have that rolled out in 2023?
Really?
September 2023, I think, already.
Wow.
Is that right? I'm going to have to double check that.
I think it was 2024, if I'm not mistaken. Oh,
or did it close in September of 2023 and then reopen in the spring of 2024?
Right. I was like, wow, yeah. 2023, that just feels like so long ago already. And I feel like it still feels pretty new, the new show. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it reopened in July 17th of 2024.
Okay, but it closed in September.
Now, over a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to think about. Time has flown. I will say that already this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so the show was so popular here in the first year of operation, Disneyland's like, hey, we want our own version of it. And in 1972, they got their own version. And then Tokyo's like, hey, we're missing out. We want this really popular show over in America. They got their own version that's still running in 1983. And they have multiple, they still have the original show that aired here in the U.S., and then they still have the holiday overlay version. So there's a there's a summertime vacation version and also a Christmas holiday vacation version. And it's so cute. And I hate that we don't have a holiday overlay for our show.
It's heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking. But yes, we had the original runtime was about just under 16 minutes. It was 15 minutes. And then 12. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I'm saying that. 12 years ago, the 15 minutes was brought down to just under 12 minutes because the guest mental retention rate dropped. And so they cut out 3 minutes of audio. And,
oh, man.
And now the current show matches the 2.0 version of the show in length and time.
Okay. So
12 minutes.
Hmm. Yes. Now,
because they removed some songs, right?
They did. So in the original soundtrack, they're like, oh my goodness, I love the original soundtrack so much. If you did not know, there is actually a Spotify playlist that I've created of in order of the original show and the songs that were written in the 50s and 60s that influenced the show. However, the two songs, there's two songs that are not on there, and they also happen to be, or one of them happens to be one of the songs that is that was cut from the show, and that was Little Devilish Mary was cut. And the second song that was cut was Fractured Folk Song. Mm. And Fractured Folk Song on the original country album was done by the same duo and on the same album that Mama Don't Whoop Lil Buford is on. And y'all know how much I love that song. Have you ever listened? And it's not that I love it. I don't love the idea of I think we should shoot him instead. But if you listen to the entire original audio, have you listened to the entire original song?
I have, yes, I have actually.
It is fantastic. I don't know, it's just and y'all, if you have not done it yet, go and listen to the original song. I don't think people realize they're talking about a real person. They're not talking about a dog, right? In Mama Don't Whoop Little Buford, and in the first couple lyrics it goes something along the lines of Buford brought home his report card. Buford was proud as can be. He had just passed through the third grade and Buford was just 23. And like, and yep. It's great. And at the end of the song, it goes into, I think we should shoot him instead. And then at the end it says, now Buford is gone. What a pity. Buford, we're as happy as can be. We've bought a big home in the city. And we're not going to give him at his give him our address is basically what they're saying. Wow. Is that they left town while he was
preoccupied. They didn't end up shooting him, which is nice. They ended up, they just deserted him.
They just got out of Dodge is what it was. So like the songs are hilarious. I think that's why I like them so much is that they tell their own story. And that's why I like certain old timey country music is because of the story that it builds. And I think that's why I like Country Bear so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. I love old country music. I'm a very big fan of old country music.
Oh, Clarence, you got the banjo out and everything?
Yeah, I've just been holding on to this the whole episode in my lap.
Well, what kind of ditty do you want to play for us?
I don't need to actually play a ditty. I don't want to get us demonetized or copyright striked or anything.
Oh, that's true.
But I did practice some of the songs just because I love the music. Something I learned when I was researching for this episode that I did not realize is that the voice of Big Al was Tex Ritter.
Yes.
Do you guys know who Tex Ritter is?
Tex Ritter did the original song.
Yes. So Tex Ritter is really quite a very interesting character because he was a Broadway star before he was a country singer, mm-hmm. and he was the first artist signed to Capitol Records when it formed. Like, wow. Very interesting story, very interesting man. And the fact that he was the voice of Big Al, and I never knew that the whole time, at least for the original show, it makes me miss original Big Al even more. Like, there's a lot that I do miss quite a bit about the original show, but I like the new one quite a lot.
Well, and yeah. That's where his singing voice was Tex Ritter. But the laugh that he does at the end when you go, right? Yeah. That was Thurl Ravenscroft.
Okay.
Who voices Tony the Tiger.
I didn't know that. That's
yes.
Hysterical.
And he's, I mean, he's done numerous different things for the Walt Disney Company. In the Haunted Mansion, he's the lead singing bust. His is the one that is knocked over in the heads.
Really?
That's him. He also is a voice actor. He's a really big voice actor. He also did the voice of Buff in Country Bear Jamboree. The buffalo. So that same like laugh, because I just don't think Tex could probably get it low enough, but like Thurl, like that's that deep booming voice is what he's known for. So yeah. I think that is so funny. Yes, Clarence.
Come on, Henry. This is so on, Henry.
In the new version, Big Al sings Remember Me, but he thinks it's too sad. I can't go on. And then he like blows his nose into the curtains.
Yeah, I do like it a lot. I like the new the new version is very cute. It's very enjoyable. I was honestly very concerned when I heard that it was going to be revamped and that it was going to be like covers of Disney songs. Mm-hmm. And like I like that they kept a lot of the spirit of the original. Everything's still very tongue in cheek. The covers are very amusing. They still feel like classic country music, even being like Remember Me or Try Everything. It's very amusing. And the costumes, the upgrades to the animatronics, I do really enjoy it. But I do miss the ending.
The slightly PG version of the show.
Yeah, I miss old Slewfoot at the end. Yeah. That was
I did not realize until I got older and I looked up for those that don't know, Old Slewfoot is the end song that all the bears come out to in the end. That's their big finale song in the original show. And I did not understand the lyrics of that song. And then as I started listening to the original, I was like, oh my goodness, I weirdly like this. Maybe this is our Appalachian roots coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this speaks to an inner part of my soul for some random reason. And it doesn't make any logical sense. No, literally.
The banjo starts playing in the background.
Oh, yeah. I am a sucker for a good banjo. And that's why I got so excited when you showed that, Clarence. And I was like, oh, he's going to play us something. But yes, it's true. We don't want a copyright strike.
That's exactly. Yeah. Ian, what do you think of the old show versus the new one?
I don't know. I'm kind of split. I feel like I'm mostly just echo what you guys said. I like the old show. I like the old country music. I like the storytelling that's kind of embedded in that. And I feel like there's something about, you know, something kind of, you know, weirdly historical about that type of music too, that really connects you to a certain part of the world, a certain, you know, just, I don't know. It's like going like the Country Music Hall of Fame or something where you're just connected to the roots of this music that's really about everyday life in a lot of ways. And so you have this really human connection to the song. So I there's part of me that like sees that, misses that about the original Country Bears. There's part of me that's also like, yeah, but like that just doesn't fit into entertainment. Like that fits into a historical context, but it's, I don't know. I don't know if I really like would say that that's like the music that I'm like listening to on my Spotify either. You know, so it's kind of like a strange like,
it is for me.
Feeling. Yeah, yeah. For Danielle, maybe it is. But so I don't know. I think in a weird way, I felt like it was kind of like a necessary upgrade kind of. And mm-hmm. I agree. I really like, I feel like it was very tastefully done the way they redid. And, you know, we have Disney hits, but there's still kind of a country version. There's still a lot of that kind of tongue-in-cheek humor of, okay, the curtain draws back and you have kind of this, you know, ridiculous couple singing Whole New World, you know, and it's like, it has the same vibe of some of the old Country Bear of just like this, wow, this is so out of place with this song, but like, that's what makes it so funny that this character is singing that. So yeah, and I think, you know, I'm interested to, I feel like I don't know the backstory or the lore behind all the new characters as well, but I feel like that's kind of interesting to know now that we have all these new characters, new stories for them and stuff too. So I think overall I'm happy with where it's at, but there's always going to be that like, ah, man, I kind of wish we could like, you know, it's like almost like I wish like for Soaring, you know, it's like we could do the same thing with Country Bears of like 1 week out of the year, we do original Country Bears. We, you know, bring it back, you know, the original show, the original songs, mm-hmm. original costumes, and kind of have like a throwback show would be really fun. I know that would be very logistically complicated and would only appease the diehard Country Bear fans. But
right.
that I would love more things like that, ways to kind of revisit what was there, but also not feel like this is the show.
If we got, I would say even just bring back the holiday overlay, right? That there's still a holiday overlay that's currently over in Tokyo. And the aesthetic and vibe of it actually would fit perfectly. And a good example of this is actually Romeo McGrowl, originally known as Liver Lips. And the new version of this character, I'm obsessed with. His is one of my favorite songs. And when he does Kiss the Girl, and I'm not even that big of an Ariel fan, but I loved his version of Kiss the Girl and how Max Buff Melvin and Henry all get into it and they're doo-wopping. And it's mm-hmm. so fantastic. In the Tokyo version, he becomes like a Christmas Elvis. And he does like a Christmassy Elvis song. We could totally do that in the new version, because even more so, he's more Elvis-y now than he was originally.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I just feel like everywhere, I feel like that's something too where we haven't, at Disney World, Clarence, mm-hmm. cover your ears. At Disney World, I feel like we have not 100% capitalized on every attraction, every show. You know, it's like, I feel like we have kind of this tendency to just say like, well, this is the show, it's good enough, instead of saying like, what if Country Bears Jamboree was the attraction that people are coming to the park to see because we have this cool overlay on it? We have this limited song we're doing. We have, you know, whatever kind of aspect you want to tie into it. I feel like that is kind of cool to start thinking about every attraction through the lens of like, this is the attraction people are coming to see. What would you do differently? As opposed to like, yeah, that's the attraction that you kill time in, or that's the attraction that as long as the AC is working, you're never going to get a complaint about, you know? So I like the idea, Danielle, mm-hmm. of like trying to maximize some of these attractions more and say like, let's bring in elements that really make them like standout attractions instead of just, you know, like flyover attractions, ones that you're just going to on the way to another attraction, or killing time waiting for your fast pass, or, you know, your lightning lane, excuse me, dating my experiences with Disney there. but you know, you're not just waiting for things to come around and then going to better rides kind of, and thinking that these attractions are not worth it. You know, having these be really, really cool experiences would be awesome to see more of that.
Oh yeah. And the
I fully agree.
Oh yeah, the
sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was gonna say the, and that's actually a regular question I get over on the socials when they see Disneyland gets all their holiday overlays for Christmas version. It's a Small World, and for Haunted Mansion Holiday. And the main question is, why don't we get that over here in Walt Disney World anymore? And the main argument is, again, like I said earlier, talking about Starlight, is that we are the international tourist destination of the world. We are not fueled by the regulars and the annual pass holders. We are the once in a lifetime park goers. And that's why we keep around the consistent versions all year round, because we know that some people, this will be their one time going. But I think for a attraction like Country Bear Jamboree, I think you could get away with it more so. Not so much like It's a Small World, though I think Small World Holiday is the best thing over in Disneyland during the holiday season. And I would love to, for us to get a version of that over here. I see why. Like, it makes sense. But I feel like out of the attractions, Country Bears, it makes most sense. And it's literally just a quick garland put up, a audio changeover, and a different sequence. And I think it would be very easy to do and very easy to switch out.
Yeah. Totally. I feel like there's a couple shows or attractions in Disney World that could benefit from having some sort of special change or overlay. I mean, like, Tiki Room immediately comes to mind. Like,
really?
I love the Enchanted Tiki Room. It's phenomenal, but I know that, like, for modern audiences, it is just a sit in the AC and soak it up for a little bit, you know?
So if it's a Polynesian holiday type vibe.
Yeah, if they're doing Mele Kalikimaka or something, or it doesn't even need to be like a holiday or Christmas overlay. Like, I mean, I don't know. Just bring back Under New Management for a little bit.
No, we don't need Under New Management. Under New Management can stay burned up with the burnt turkey version of it. The good times. But with the change that's happened, the other big question that I've got from followers when this first switched over and people saying, oh, I miss the old show, I can't believe that they changed it. I appreciate, I acknowledge, and I loved the old show. But the new one, what really clicked for me and the reason why it changed was because for the first time I was able to witness a little one under the age of 5. In the first 2 weeks of it being open, I was going seeing it quite a lot because I was trying to pay attention to every single little detail and all the fun facts, which are, a lot of them are written in the book, by the way. But the all of a sudden during the song that Terrence, or AKA Shaker, sings when he's doing, a Fixer Upper from the movie Frozen. And I love that that song got some appreciation because it's not represented in any other Frozen attraction. It's only represented here in Country Bears. And that's true. Wow. As soon as Fixer Upper comes on, she is standing in right in front of her seat and she is dancing. And I realized this is why this show changed, because it has to appeal to the next generation. I'd rather these bears stick around and entertain the next gen than just stay old and decrepit and not changing on my behalf, because that is why they would disappear completely if that was the case. So I'd rather they stick around and get changes and update it.
Yeah.
Everybody knows musicians, they write new music, they got to play new songs to stay, you know, relevant. So it's Country true. Bears, they're just doing what musicians do, playing new music, doing new things.
Now, I am excited to hear, like I kind of alluded to it, that we're going to be going to Disneyland here very, very soon. And I'm excited to show you guys the tie-in between the new version of Country Bears and Hungry Bear, the quick service restaurant over in Bayou Country in Disneyland. And because I mentioned it, a little fun fact for you guys to keep an eye out on if you are listening over in California or you're listening over here in Walt Disney World. In the Walt Disney World queue, the display case, as you walk through the doors, it is on the right, farthest, closest to the door. There's a little tiny case you look down into. It has a microphone, and then it has a napkin with the original set list of ideas that the Bears were supposedly working on for their brand new show. And the napkin is from a Hungry Bear restaurant in Disneyland. It's a great little tie-in. And then when you go to Hungry Bear in Disneyland, there are all the posters of the Bears. Teddy Bear Swing is hanging from the backside of the building. You can hear the instrumental version of the song and a couple of other versions from the new soundtrack. And there's still great nods and references. I think it's still Trixie and Big Al are the icons on the bathroom downstairs. And then the 5 bear rugs are still, their plaque is still displayed behind the counter. And it makes me happy every time I go there. I'm like, oh, my bears are still here in Disneyland, even though they're technically not anymore. Because for those that don't know, Disneyland lost their version of the Country Bears show in 2001 to make way for Splash Mountain. But Max, Buff, and Melvin are still hidden over inside the Winnie the Pooh ride, if you look closely.
Yeah, Christopher Walken finally got his way and crushed Country Grizzly Hall like he did in the movie from 2002.
Claire, do you want to elaborate on that, Clarence? Because you, for some reason, really like that movie, and I try not to acknowledge it.
I have a weird fascination with the 2002 Country Bears movie and how much of a commercial flop it was and how awful it is. There's something weird about it that I appreciate. I think it was a big risk. I appreciate that Disney took the risk with it. It really shows where we were at after 9/11, like in 2002, like where we were as a country. We really thought, oh, let's make a live action Country Bears movie and like get Elton John in it. Like, come on. It's just so odd.
It's weird to think of how many things Elton John has randomly been a part of in the Disney, in the Disney lore.
I think Queen Latifah was in it as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Christopher Walken plays like the main villain, and the scene of him in his office where he has like, he presses this comically large red button and this weight falls down on this model of Grizzly Hall, which in the movie they call it Country Bear Hall, and that drives me nuts. That is something that drives me nuts, because it's Grizzly Hall. It's not Country Bear Hall. But in the movie, Christopher Walken, he smashes it. He's like, oh, no, Country Bear Hall has been crushed. And he just and he does it like over and over and over again. He's just like destroying these model. He has like 15 models of the Country Bear Hall in his office that he's just destroying over and over again. And I just think it's the goofiest. I just love that scene for some reason. I think it's so funny.
My question to the props department is, were there actually 15 different versions, or did they just keep repeating the exact same sequence? And that's hilarious.
They probably filmed it two or three times and just shot it from multiple angles over and over again. But in the movie, they edit it like he's doing it like 15, 16 times. It's ridiculous. And wow, yeah, but he finally got his way and got it out.
This is giving me California Star Wars Life Day vibes, you know. It's just kind of like that that part of the universe that we just say it was there, but let's not talk about it, you know. Let's just kind of acknowledge that that happened and forget about it as quickly as we can.
Goodness, I was not wanting to end this podcast segment on the action version of Country Bears.
Luckily, Danielle.
Shout out Haley Joel Osment for playing Barry Barrington. You know, what a legend.
Well, we don't have to end on a negative note about the Country Bears, because you can experience all the positive things about the Country Bears in the Dapper Danielle's book, I Love Disney's Magic Kingdom.
Y'all saw my video talking about the not-so-great interaction I had with the Chicago News Network, and y'all spoke out in volumes. The amount of emails, the amount of messages, not even to me. You guys reached out to Anderson's Bookshop in the suburbs of Chicago, and Anderson... Well, like I was like reading, we were going through the emails, and I was talking with Ian. I'm like, do we need to reach out to Anderson's Bookshop? This is where everybody's talking about. And we were like, yeah, no, we need to reach out to them. So we told our publisher, and our publisher at Adams Media is like, funny you should say that. Anderson's Bookshop has already talked about you all of a sudden. And we're like, this is great. Let's schedule something. Let's put something on the books. And yeah, so it's definitely meant to be. That's going to be happening towards the end of September, September 20th at 4 p.m. Also, should we go ahead and tell them, Ian, that we have officially finished submitting the second book?
Yeah, good. Why not?
Yeah.
Cat's out of the bag now.
I mean, it is already out of the bag because everybody else already found out about it. Now, I you know, typically our publishing team, who we love over at Adams Media, they're like, oh, don't promote it until like 3 months out. Like, you guys don't need to really start talking about it just yet. we didn't have to say anything. You guys already found it. You already found out about the second book, which is called I Love Epcot. It is going to be all about our favorite park that opened up in 1982. And it's very similar to the I Love Disney's Magic Kingdom, going around in that same sequence, written in the fun bite-sized formats like the other book. But now it's all about Epcot. So yes, we did write that one. It's going to be releasing in January of 2026. And pre-orders are technically already out now over on Amazon, and it will be very soon over on the other websites, wherever you get your books from, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, wherever. So some more fun information to come, but I will acknowledge that, yes, it is there. Yes, it is written by Ian and myself, and yeah, it's great. We're so excited about this. So hopefully by the time we get after holiday season, we're going to be doing a signing event for two books. We're going to be going signing for both Epcot and Magic Kingdom. So fun things to come, y'all.
Twice as many books to sign.
Honestly, I didn't even think about that. You were literally the first. That's the first mention of that.
Gonna have to become ambidextrous and like
ambidextrous. I can't do that though. You're ambidextrous though, Ian. Right?
No. My younger brother is. I could. I don't know. I don't think I could do it both at the same time. I could probably do a passing signature with my right hand, even though I'm left-handed. But doing them at the same time would be mentally very challenging. Maybe Clarence, the drumming skills, maybe he could do it well. But I don't know.
I've tried. I can't. So we're just I ain't got to sign them.
We're just going to have to allocate more time for signing.
I'll just be in the corner just vibing.
You know what? That would be great. I think next time we didn't have for the Tennessee signing. Maybe we should have had that. You should have been the line entertainment. Like, we should have propped you up on a stool. Well, y'all, thank you again for listening this far into the show and listening to the very, very end, for bearing with us to the bare end, as we've been saying. Make sure you go ahead and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you leave those stars. Send us fan messages over on my Instagram. Also, you can send them to my email too, thedapperdanielle@gmail.com, and I'll be able to see them there too, and I can read them out on the show as we get a couple more episodes going. So very excited for those too. And anything else that you would like to add or wrap up with, Ian or Clarence?
I say, y'all come back now. You hear?
Perfect. Until next time, night night, sleep tight, dream of churros tonight.